She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think, we just want you to. And this show is sponsored by the Fairfax Companies. We appreciate their support. We love what they do. We love their mission. And we thank them for their support of the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. Thanks, everybody, for joining us today. I'd like to start out by welcoming our guest. Her name is Anita Kobashevsky, and she is the author of the book Food, Field to Fork. She is an avid gardener, a great cook, a registered dietitian, and a woman with a passion for healthy cooking and eating, among her many accomplishments. Anita, welcome, and thanks for being with us here today.
Oh, and thanks for inviting me.
Okay, I'm going to go on with a couple of quick announcements, and then go back to my proper introduction, what I really want to say about Anita Kobashevsky. So remember that Mrs. Green is also a proud member of the Dream Vision 7 radio network. And don't forget to join me live every Saturday at noon Arizona time at MrsGreensWorld.com. Remember that you can listen on your iPhone or your Droid, and that all of the podcasts from the shows live on my website for your listening pleasure. We're getting a lot of traffic on Blog Talk Radio, and we're really happy about that. So just remember to follow everything that's going on in Mrs. Green's World at MrsGreensWorld.com. Connect with me on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, Instagram, and you can always email me, info@MrsGreensWorld.com, if you have questions about the show or anything green that pops into your mind. So this is the time in the show where I do a quick shout out for one of our wonderful sponsors, whose sponsorship really helps support my mission and the mission of Mrs. Green's World, and the name of the company is EcoBella. I am proud of all the partners who are part of my world, and I have to say that the more I learn about EcoBella and their company, their leadership in the natural body care, cosmetics, and supplement industry, the more impressed I am. And I say that from my heart. They create non-toxic products, which has become an increasingly more important issue to me and to my team and for my family and for all of the people a part of my world. They use generous quantities of organic herbs, not a little drop or two. They use organic aloe vera. They use only the finest quality essential oils. They use natural colors, nutraceuticals. They use cold-pressed oils, exotic butters, and minimal preservatives. And I say all of those things so that you know I've done my homework and I know what I'm putting on my skin. The purity of their products, to me, sets them apart. And when you combine EcoBella's commitment to animal protection, their outstanding environmental preservation efforts, you know that you're using products that you can trust and that you're supporting a company that is truly committed to the greater good. To me, they're the epitome of a socially conscious business, and I enthusiastically encourage you to visit their website at www.ecobella, that's eco with two C's, .com, and try their products. I would love to know what you think. I'd love you to try them. So a little bit more now about Anita Kobashevsky. Anita, I have to say that refreshing my, doing my homework and looking at your book, This is not in the script part. I think I'm unscriptable anyway, but I wish everybody that's listening would order your book. And it's not just because of the content, which is, of course, the most important thing, but your writing style is engaging, it's fun, it's conversational. It's the way that I hope when I finish my book that people say these things about it. You know, you have comments in there about, so what's the big fat deal? You talk in such a conversational tone that I forgot, and I'll be honest with you, keep it lean. It's clever. It's catchy. I want to make sure that we cover you had a page in there that really touched me a lot. Maybe it's because of my age. Maybe it's because I've always cared. But the page that you wrote, Are You Lonely Tonight? You have funny chapters about Happy Hoedown. And I have to say, it's an unusual, non-scripted announcement of the introduction to you. So there's my heartfelt endorsement of Food Field to Fork, How to Grow Sustainably, Shop Wisely, Cook Nutritiously, and Eat Deliciously. Who would not want to buy this book? So there you go.
Well, I hope everybody would want to buy the book, but mostly because they don't need a coaster for their coffee cup, because they really want to have a good read and learn something and have something that they can use for the long term as far as reference, et cetera.
And they will. They will earmark it. They'll have pages. They'll have little yellow or orange stickies on it like I do. And I'm so glad that I've had you on the show to remind me of that. So I always think it's a really good way to start the show by talking about a little bit about your background. And lots of people say they're going to write a book, and more people than not do not ever get that book written. So give us a little bit about who is Anita Kobashevsky and how did you come to write this great book?
Well, thanks for inviting me, Gina. I appreciate it very much, the opportunity to share my passion today. Well, I came about writing the book. I'm actually grew up in the Midwest on a farm in farm country, and the book is about my personal life experiences growing up in the Midwest. It begins with memoirs throughout the book. I've been told the book is humorous. I hope that's true.
It is so true.
I'm going to choose to believe that. It's about my love for food. I'm a registered dietitian. I have a master's degree in dietetics, food service administration and dietetics from Kansas State University, which is one of the leaders in dietetics, on the planet, actually. From there, that's what my credential is. But my love for food, I love to garden, I love to cook, mostly I love to eat. I am, of course, as a registered dietitian, I'm a nutrition expert, but I wanted to bring together all of the things that I need as I go out and do my practice of dietetics and living life, all those pieces from, they say dietitians help people from womb to tomb. You know, as long as you are alive, we can help you out. So we work with folks throughout the life cycle. And so this book is about nutrition throughout the life cycle. But my upbringing, my Midwestern roots, the big, strong work ethic growing up on the farm around agriculture, and my grandfather taught me a good deal about sustainability, and sustainability is about being independent. You can be interdependent, but not being dependent upon someone else for your food, like the grocery store. You can, grow your own legally, of course. Grow your own and be sustainable. You can, decrease your fuel trail as far as when you select the foods that you eat to make sure that it's grown as close to home, because that makes more sense.
So what do you do? I mean, this is going off on a tangent already, but when you say that, we're going to talk about, you do really strongly advise growing sustainably, and you're from the Midwest. What do people do all winter? And I agree with you, shop as close to home for your food as possible. I think the movement is wonderfully growing. But what do you do in the Midwest with all of those pretty harsh winters?
Well, what we're finding now are there more hoop gardens. If you can visualize a Quonset hut, or if you took half of a barrel and you cut it in half, not horizontally but vertically, and then you laid it on its side, and it's a hoop garden, and you, it's like a large greenhouse. And then there's a lot of canning that goes on in the winter, in the summertime, from the gardens that people grow,
right?
And they can that, and then of course they do depend upon the local grocery stores for what they need as far as in between. But that piece there, it is a little tougher in the winter, but you can have your canned items that you had from the summer. And as far as fresh, fresh storybooks about the winters on the prairie. You know, you didn't have fresh produce in the winter on the prairie. You had things that you canned, et cetera. So the fact of the matter is now in the culture that we have now and our big food system, our world's global food system, you can get that in the winter time. But, you learn ways of the preservation piece. The home canning is back on the rise.
That's, it never ceases to amaze me. It is, and it's not something that I do, but people in my circle of friends have been talking about what they're doing we don't really have harsh winters here out in Tucson, trust me. But even there are things, really, harsh winter, it's 58, for the low. But people are really, they're going to the farmers markets. The growth of home gardens is just amazing to me. I cannot believe how many of my friends have taken the step to have home gardenings. So let's talk about, we can't go through the book chapter by chapter, but I really want to try and touch on as many as we can because you simplify things. Like your first chapter says, it's not complicated, it's food. And you talk about balance. This isn't a radical book. This is a book about simplifying food, about slowing down and really looking at health simply. So talk a little bit about the inspiration for that chapter.
Well, simplifying food, people think that the food has to be complicated, and it isn't. And they get, I had a parent that was, I do some work in the school systems out here in Northern California, and I'm currently located out in the San Francisco Bay Area. I did some work with the schools that have community gardens there, the little school gardens. And one parent was crying to me because she was so concerned about the political relationship with her food and what was organic and what wasn't organic and, what were they doing to the chickens and all those sorts of things. And I understand that there's, those pieces as far as
animal cruelty. I know, it kind of sounds like me. I mean, it does.
Well, you want to take that all into consideration, but in the end, nutrition doesn't start till the food passes the lips. And so it just slow down and eat from a variety of foods and decrease the number of times that you dine out per week. That can also save on fuel from you driving around. It also saves on waste of the packaging, those sorts of things. With regards to that chapter, it began the piece where I was able to bring up about behavior change. And my book is nonfiction. It's a practical, non-political approach to cooking and nutrition and health and sustainability, gardening and wellness. So if you're looking for something political, don't buy my book because it's not political. It's just about going with the flow as far as eating from a variety of foods. But when you think about it, it almost is so foreign to some folks that things are so complicated that it almost feels political. The whole food piece feels political. And so then you just having a calm environment where when you eat and around the food that you eat is important. So in that chapter, I wanted to help people understand that where they were on any given day is okay. And so I talk about the phases of change, and I did reference back to the behavior researchers in 1983, Prochaska and Del Clemente, who talked about the model about cigarette smoking and behavior change. So are you in pre-contemplation, contemplation, preparation, action, or maintenance? Where are you right now? Are you saying, hey, I may be 40 pounds overweight, but I feel great. I have no problems at all. Just because my cholesterol is 500, that's not a big deal. I'm as happy as a clam. And then it might be, well, you know what, I'm tired of carrying. That would be pre-contemplation. You're saying, hey, I'm good with this. And contemplation might be, well, hey, here I am. I'm 50 pounds overweight. Yeah, my lipids are high. I kind of lose my breath now and then when I'm walking across the yard. Maybe that might be a good idea maybe to lose a little bit of weight. And then the next might be preparation, the preparation phase of, well, you know what? What could I do to help me maybe just lose a few pounds because I really might feel better? And then action. You know what? Now I'm actually, you know, walking a little bit. I'm walking around the block, you know, three times a week. You're in action. And you're, oh, you know what, I'm going to buy some produce and I'm going to have it in my, because you know what, if you don't buy it at the store, you're not likely to eat it. Because you can't eat an apple unless somebody's given it to you. And so as far as to work you into your action phase and then maintenance, you know, okay, now this is part of my lifestyle. So wherever you are for today is good enough. It's okay, but it's about awareness. You know, awareness is everything. So it's not complicated. It's food. It's, you know, where you are today is good enough. And, you know, one little step, baby steps, progress, not perfection, as we move towards, you know, in our lives to have, you know, a healthy life and a healthy lifestyle.
So it's refreshing to me that you make the comment about it not being political, because I totally agree with you. It shouldn't be. My show isn't either. It's like, why is this even in the political conversation? We are what we eat, and our body doesn't know anything about the politics of it. So that is, to me, a very refreshing approach. And I want to ask you that since you wrote the book, lots of really good things.
Have I lost all my friends? No. Go ahead.
I'm sure you've gained quite a few. But the thing is, do you see that from your view that people are moving in a more conscious direction, that there's hope for not just putting things in your mouth unconsciously, that people are trying a little bit harder? Because I know I consider myself totally mainstream, and I am an old hippie, because I love that thing in your book where the hippies write. Of course we were right, but it's funny to say.
Well, because a lot of that piece when the whole vegetarian movement came, and you know, that became the awareness, and I talk about the different, you know, what are the different types of vegetarians that we now have, because what we're doing now is we're actually moving more towards plant-based nutrition.
Right, right. And so what are you seeing about among consumers? I mean, we'll talk about your book and it's growing in popularity, which I find very encouraging. But in your work and in your world, do you see consumers really moving more to the pre-contemplation and getting into action stages?
Well, I think, and that's a great question. I always say that when I'm trying to think of what I'm going to say. That's a great question. I think there's more, because of the information, we're in the information age, right? And so there's more information out there. But that means there's also, can be just as much misinformation, right? So as there's more information and there's more awareness, just like anything, if you're aware of it, then you're a little more cognizant of it, and you can navigate a little bit better because you have that awareness. Now we know what some of these foods that are that it has a lot of fats that are solid at room temperature helps to give rise to cardiovascular heart disease. Obesity gives rise to a multitude of diseases, and I list them in my book. Those sorts of awarenesses can't stop from helping people maybe modify their behavior a bit. We're still a long way from getting where we need to be as far as walking more to where we're going. And, you know, it used to be if you saw a guy riding a bike, it must have been because he had a DUI and he couldn't drive his car, right? And now we see people walking and riding their bikes because it's cool. Of course, in the Midwest, you know, if you're living in Texas, you're not going to be, you know, there's a different cultural sort of thing, so you're not going to be maybe riding your bike so far because it's not as urban, so we have to get a little bit out of the urban mindset and into not every place is urban. There's, you know, a lot of small communities across the United States, and what are those folks doing? I hope that they're walking more. I hope that we're seeing more farmers markets. That's definitely on the rise. My hometown in Hanover, Kansas, has one of the only year-round farmers markets in the state. It's year-round, and it's right up by the Nebraska border, and there are people that have hoop gardens in that area, and they grow produce year-round. And you can get fresh spinach, fresh tomatoes, and it's phenomenal. It's just, I think if you looked up littlebluerifarms.com, that's a sustainable farmers right there in my little hometown of 600 people smack dab in the heart of America.
Unbelievable. So you come from a really good stock, as they say.
I come from the barnyard. I come from the earth. That's right. Yeah. The book is dedicated to my grandfather, Charles Carver, who was a farmer down in Saline County in Kansas, in Gypsum area, and also out in western Kansas. I was born by Dodge City, and you know, very much in the whole gardening piece. We had huge amounts of walnut trees, and so we ate walnuts growing up. We didn't know that that was like, you know, that's a kind of an that's a, can be a very expensive nut to buy in the store, but it is wonderful. Savory nut, wonderful nut, and we didn't know it was such a great thing. We just knew it was free, and we could eat it. And so I think what's moving in that direction is people are reminding more of gardening. It used to be a status symbol to have a yard and to have a garage, you know, and people, you know, used to have their gardens in the front yard. Now they're moving them to the backyard, and then it was the deal to, oh, you should have grass, because that shows a status symbol. And, oh, now you need to have a garage because we're all status symbols. And what we're seeing is some of that changing, where people might be planting Swiss chard up their walkway. And, you know, that's also very decorative.
I know,
very
and that's
colorful.
Really cool. I know, it's
and
right.
You can
it
eat
looks
it.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
And you can eat it.
You can eat your shrubs. You know, I mean, it's not a shrub. But you can eat, you know, some of the things that are right there for, you know, to beautify your yard. The thinking about those sorts of things.
So we are going to, believe it or not, I told you when I checked in with you earlier that time would fly, and we're already on our approaching our first break. So everybody I know who's listening will want to stay with me. We're having a fun, engaging, informative conversation with Anita Kobashevsky, author of Food Field to Fork. Stay with us. We're going to talk about shopping wisely, cooking nutritiously, and eating deliciously. Stay here with me. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Abbott Taylor. With over 35 years creating jewelry in Tucson, no one has more experience in designing and making diamond jewelry in Tucson than Abbott Taylor Jewelers. Please come in and see some of the thousands of designs we have created, or come in and have us design something original just for you. Whether you're looking for a simple and stylish graduation gift, your engagement ring, or a breathtaking jewelry piece to celebrate an important birthday or anniversary, you can't beat our competitive diamond pricing. With 100% trade-up guaranteed, set in an Abbott Taylor jewelry design, always using earth-friendly recycled gold. Abbott Taylor Jewelers, exquisite jewelry designs and exceptional diamond deals created right here in Tucson for over 35 years. Abbott Taylor Jewelers at 6383 East Grant Road, on Facebook and on the web at atdiamonds.com. Diamond designs for everyone. Abbott Taylor Jewelers.
In the mid-Tucson summer, you would expect it to be over 100 degrees, but deep beneath the University of Arizona's compost heap, temperatures can hit 160. Started by the Compost Cats student group, the U of A Compost Project is collecting tons of waste from around campus and keeping it out of landfills. Gathering garbage and converting it into a useful product for the community? Now that's a hot idea indeed. The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
It's got advanced technology. It's got major breakthroughs in technology everywhere you look. It's the 2013 Honda Accord. Hi there, this is Mrs. Green, and I want to share with you that after nearly 40 years of heritage, this is the most stunning Accord ever. The highly respected Automotive Magazine raves that the 2013 Honda Accord offers unparalleled talent of goodness. Please visit Chapman Honda at 4646 East 22nd Street in Tucson to check it out and see for yourself.
You can always find things around the house to give to Goodwill, but I have a bigger reason to give. A while back, I lost my job and I couldn't even support my family. A lot of people don't know Goodwill can help you find a job, but that's what they did for me. I've had this job for 7 years and I love going to work. You know how they say Goodwill changes lives? Well, it's true. Goodwill needs your donations now more than ever. Please donate today.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to, and we are giving you lots to think about today. with a fabulous, fun person. Her name is Anita Kobashevsky. She's the author of Food, Field to Fork. She is a great cook, I'm sure. Maybe someday I'll get to try that out and give my own personal testimonial. An avid gardener, a registered dietitian, and a woman with a very, very obvious passion for healthy cooking and eating among her many accomplishments. So, Anita, here we are with the second segment already. Let's go from, you talk about, this is really an important one to me, where you said, eat what you like what you eat. And it's a very well-rounded, practical approach to looking at what's on your plate. So do you want to go into that a little bit? Because I think that's encouraging to me. It's like, it's not lecturing, it's not daunting. It's like, just like what you eat and think about it and make sure it's well-rounded.
Right. And that is very important. And if we look at what, nutrition doesn't start till the food passes the lips. So you need to think about the foods that you like to eat and then try to incorporate other additional foods to increase your variety. So the main piece when we talk about healthy eating, and the book includes, there's a section, Nutrition 101, that talks about all the different nutrients, also talks about probiotics and functional foods. But also in that, we talk about eating from a variety of foods, and I talk about carbohydrates, proteins, and fats, et cetera. The 2010 Dietary Guidelines for Americans guides us even further, encouraging us to eat whole grains, fruits, legumes, dark green, orange, red vegetables, eating from a variety of foods that about per day, 3 ounce equivalent of a whole grain, a couple cups of fruit, 2.5 cups of vegetables. And so if you can just do that, if you can increase your produce intake, you can increase, produce means fruits and vegetables. I will tell you, if you start to drink 10 to 12, unless you have other medical issues that where you perhaps have renal problems or something where you have a fluid restriction. But for healthy folks, if you start drinking 8 to 10 to 12 glasses of water a day and you start eating 6 to 9 servings of produce per day, if that's one of your first things on your plate, so to speak, first things that you try to strive to do, all the rest of your nutrition will pretty well come in line, because you feel better about yourself when you're hydrating and when you're eating from a variety of foods, especially foods that are rich in nutrition and they are low in fat and they give you energy. I mean, the complex carbohydrates, those carbohydrates that take a little bit more time to metabolize, are your whole grains and your produce, your fruits and vegetables. The fats take a little bit longer to metabolize, in addition to your produce. So, of course, I'm a big proponent of, milk is a wonderful, complete food itself. But eating from a variety of foods, so we want to increase eating from a variety of foods. And so if all you like to eat is, the closest thing you ever come to eating a whole grain is a Rice Krispie treat,
You're in really deep and serious doo-doo if that is your idea of a whole grain. We're in trouble, folks.
We might want to say, do you like rice? Well, then how about trying, a little bit of brown rice, moving into a direction that you would increase your variety of foods. So, nutrition doesn't start until the food passes the lips. I can't say that enough. And common sense isn't common to us all. So we just need to move baby steps towards, I can't stand to eat tomatoes. Well, do you like tomato juice? Well, yeah, I like tomato juice. Well, how about drinking a half a cup of tomato juice a day? I mean, increasing the amount of produce that you get in your diet. And finding ways
that work for you. And I think that's another thing I loved about the book. It's like finding ways that work for you, and it's not preachy. I'm trying to find the comment you said. I mean, I literally laughed out loud when you talked about booze and you called it hooch and fire water and on and
you can't get drunk by drinking grape juice.
Yeah, you didn't say you don't have to like avoid the alcohol, but really and truly, it's a lot of empty calories. So be careful, and it's again everything in balance. Another part that I underlined and put exclamation point is, you've got to be a conscious consumer to me more now than anything, than ever. So you said if you're eating fresh foods, a lot of the things that you might have to worry about are automatically eliminated because you're not having to worry about, you know, preservatives and sodium and what the heck else do they put in it to make it look pretty. So if you're eating from the field to putting it on your fork, that's good. But you really talked about, this made me laugh too, so I really did remember how much I loved your book. You talk about looks can be deceiving, and you say, use the example of brown rice. And just because it's brown doesn't mean it's healthy. And
right, or bread that's bread. Brown. Oh, the bread is brown, and now it's whole grain.
Oh, I know it's got to be good for me.
Well, that whole grain means that they ground up the whole kernel. That's what that means.
Right.
And so what's going to be in there? You're going to get all benefits from that kernel of wheat or grain, whatever it is. So we want to increase that because why? Well, because it'll be more nutritious overall. It's not refined, meaning nothing's taken away from it. And then it also has the other attributes. Like with it, it also provides the actual product that will make the bread, but you get the fiber, which we know that a diet that's higher in fiber can also help decrease certain propensity to getting certain types of disease. But when we talk about, you know, I think a little bit of direction I think you're going is minimizing, minimize avoidable food losses and waste. So more than one-third of the food produced in the U.S. is discarded. Households in the United States throw away 14% of the food purchased.
That's disgusting. I mean, it's really...
Well, the result is that because we're wealthy in this country.
Right.
We are wealthy. I mean, you want to see real poverty. I mean, I've been in the Navy for, what, almost 25 years, and I have practiced dietetics all over the world, and I will, you know, I'm a reservist now, and I will tell you, you want to see true poverty, you know, go to a third world country. Go, you know, the fact of the matter is we're, even in our poverty, we're wealthy compared to other countries. And so we need to think about, you know, what we're doing, like leaving the water running, leaving the lights on, cutting a little bit closer to that apple core, eating the flesh on the outside of eating the skin, if it's an edible skin on the orange, wash it well and eat it. I mean, those sorts of things, that decreases waste. And the membrane on the outside of the orange, after you take the peel off, that white membrane has a laxative effect. So, you know, it'll keep you regular. So there's just benefits in doing the whole nine yards. So buying only the amount of food you will use before it spoils or by its use best by date.
And you store
perishable.
Go ahead.
What?
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, store perishable foods appropriately. Preserve your foods in a timely way. Just make sure that I wrote that in the book, Are You Lonely Tonight, that section you mentioned in the intro. You know, if you have a neighbor and you're Costco, Sam's Club, whatever those, the large
the big box stores, places where you
the
can
big
go
box
shopping,
places.
Right.
Right. I mean, do you really need that much? How about splitting it with two neighbors? And then you might start conversation with your neighbors, and you might actually have a relationship with your neighbors. What a concept. You know, you say hello to each other more, which stimulates you more, which maybe gets you out more, which maybe you can start taking walks with them around the block. I mean, there's all these sorts of community things that you can do that all the beginning of it, the pivot point is that you are trying to conserve and not have waste. I mean, if you buy a gallon of milk and you throw away half of it every time you don't drink it and half of it goes, you know, you have to throw it away. What is that telling you? That maybe you should start buying a half a gallon, right?
Right. Start buying in smaller quantities.
Right, right, right. And so, those are just some ideas. Compost, plant-based food scraps as appropriate. To convert them back into the soil, and you know that you get more worm action, and then you have, you know, better soil in your garden.
You know, and you actually let's go back to the fiber discussion because there you write about friendly fiber.
Friendly fiber. You gotta love her.
You gotta love friendly fiber. I think she's my new best friend. But it's a funny section of the book. Another funny section. And you talk about, do crabby, mean folk really need more fiber than a psychotherapist, I think was the words. And I think that we went away from fiber is fattening and don't eat bread and don't eat carbs and on and on. So give us your dietitian's view on the importance of eating the right fiber for all, for an entire digestive system, and what types of fiber that you think should be, you know, goals that we actually set for ourselves.
Well, you want to consume about anywhere from 20 to 30 grams of fiber per day. You could even go as high as 35, but if you do too much fiber, then you're going to start maybe pulling out some of the nutrients that you are consuming, and you'll be having so frequent of bowel movements, that can be an issue also. And then definitely I will not be your friend.
and you will not invite us over for dinner. Okay.
Right, right. But fiber is very important with regards to regular elimination. It's a rich source of nutrients. Whole grains give more bang for your buck is what I write. It helps reduce chronic diseases such as diabetes, heart disease, high blood pressure, cancer. Whole grains are an important source of fiber, thiamine, riboflavin, niacin, folic acid, iron, selenium, zinc, and magnesium. And so the wealth of disease-fighting nutrients contained in grains, tasty morsels, can help protect and defend against disease and provide more nourishment to your body. And so the whole idea of you need carbohydrates to think straight. That's just very important. That is the, carbohydrates are the first thing your body uses for energy. And so carbohydrates, we call it, you'll see it abbreviated CHO because it only has carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen in it, okay? And so that's what your body uses first for energy. And so say you're training for a marathon or you're training for some athletic event, and there's no event that you're going to be needing to go out and eating a whole bunch of fat and a whole bunch of protein because those aren't metabolized as quickly and as efficiently as carbohydrates are for energy. I think about 46 or 47% of a protein molecule is utilized for energy. Okay, so carbohydrates are a source of are your good source of energy, and so you can get those from your produce, from your whole grains. And so when it comes to grains, having a good balance of that throughout the day, there's nothing wrong with bread. If you sit down and you have to eat a loaf of it,
you're in a lot
then,
of trouble.
Then we need to talk. Then we need to talk because that's
the behavioral
issue.
Then we need to call Anita on her cell phone.
There you go. And you can write me anytime at anitabehealthy.com. You can on there. You can go to foodfieldtofork.com. There's a place you can write me there. There are behavioral issues that are related to why we sometimes say you can't have this, you can have that. You know, it is about moderation, and moderation isn't sexy, and it doesn't sell trick gadgets, but moderation is really what's important, and carbohydrates are very, very important. You'll see somebody that gets on a low-carb diet, and what do? They lose 10, 15 pounds in 2 weeks or something, but that's water weight. A gallon of water weighs 8 pounds, so when they go off of that, see, on a healthy eating, you don't go on and off of anything, do you?
Right. No.
You don't.
Right.
Because, So the bottom line is when they stop following that regime and they go back to eating the carbohydrates, which they're probably craving, okay, anyway, you're going to see their weight come right back up because the body needs water, you know, to function. And so and all things in the body happen in the presence of water. All reactions happen in the presence of water. That's why also when a person goes on a low-carb diet, instantly in that little instruction, whether you got it at the coffee shop or whoever's on this diet or whatever, it'll tell you drink a lot of water because they say, oh, it'll flush the toxins out. And so the piece there is that whole grains are very, very important, and you need to make sure to read the label. You want to make sure that it look for the words 100% whole on WHOLE. A whole on the product name, which means all the grains in the foods are whole grains. Anything short of this means that the food was made from a combination of different grains or refined grains. And here's the piece there, Gina. It's about mouthfeel. See, this nice confectioner we're very, very refined. I don't even use the word refined in what I'm saying, but we really have it down to a science our confections, our cakes, our, you know, the things that the pies, the desserts that are so smooth in our mouth. We like it nice and smooth, right? And so that smooth mouth feel, that now we've packaged it and we call it some sort of a whatever it is, and it's convenient because you want to eat it on the run. Why are you eating everything on the run? Would be my first question. But those sorts of things have a nice mouth feel to them, so it's pleasing. But typically those things that don't require you to do anything to them in your mouth, probably when it comes to a carbohydrate or a bread or cereal, maybe don't have a lot of fiber in them.
And it may be one of the worst things. I think our palates get trained for that. And so it's really a part of what you're talking about to me is texture. And I have a huge texture problem. And one of the solutions in our life has been smoothies. And even then, I think you have to be really careful. But I can do kale and spinach in smoothies. Eating kale, not so much. I mean, my friend makes, she does a lot of raw food, and she makes kale chips that are dehydrated, and she puts healthy spices on them. So I can do that because there's that crunch. But I think the thing that resonated with me and that I loved about your book is find out what's right for you and do it consciously and get on a path where we are, believe it or not, Anita, I told you, the time is flying. We're coming up here on our second break. When we come back, I'd like to get your take on salt, about that, and should we shake it? I really want to talk a little bit more about Are You Lonely Tonight, and then share with people right-sizing their portions, because that's another thing. We can eat almost anything if we eat it right. And then how you came up with the idea, because you do an A to Z recipe in your book, and I think it's clever, and I think it's important. And maybe we even fill in a little bit about pedal pushers. We'll be right back. Anita Kobashevsky, author of Food, Field to Fork. Please stay here with me.
Go deep underwater without getting wet. Study bugs like a real scientist. Make your shadow move in colors. These are just three reasons to visit the exciting hands-on new exhibits at the Children's Museum Tucson, the region's only museum just for kids. For 25 years, we've ignited kids' imaginations at the Children's Museum Tucson. That's something to celebrate. And admission is only $2 on the first Sunday and on the 25th of each month this whole year. Children's Museum Tucson, where imagination and learning connect.
Hi there, this is Mrs. Green with some exciting news. The all-new 2013 Honda Accord is here. It's got a new level of sophistication. It's an efficiency expert, and when you drive one, you can discover how EcoAssist can help you increase your fuel efficiency. For a record 26th time, the Honda Accord has been named to Car and Driver's esteemed 10 Best list. To check them out, visit Chapman Honda at 4646 East 22nd Street. They have a great selection of 2013 Accords in stock right now.
Do you dare to share? In 2009, the University of Arizona started its car sharing program. Today, students, faculty, and staff have access to a shared fleet of cars that includes 7 hybrids and even the zero emissions Nissan Leaf. Not only does car sharing give the campus community wheels, but it takes all those extra cars off the road too. Now that greens things up, doesn't it? The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
Are you thinking about swapping out your old items for new? Think Habitat when you do. Don't trash it. Have a store it. Habitat for Humanity Tucson will resell your donated furniture, appliances, and building supplies and use the proceeds to build affordable homes in the greater Tucson area. Call now at 520-889-7200 for a free pickup. You can bring your donations to Habitat's Have a Store at 935 West Grant Road, just a quarter mile east of I-10. For more information, go to habitattucson.org.
Welcome back, everybody. You are indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think, we just want you to. We are talking today with Anita Kobashevsky, who is the author of Food, Field to Fork. And Anita, I have to make a short announcement or I'll get in big trouble. And I've been having so much fun that this is what happens to me. Thank God I make good notes. So let's remember to follow Mrs. Green on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram, and stay in touch with my world because we love it and we have great things to share, like Anita Kobashevsky. And for all of you business owners and consumers that are committed to a more sustainable life, come join me in Phoenix this coming week. I'm going to be up there. I'm going to get empowered to green my organization even more, if that's possible. But it's the second annual Go Green Conference in Phoenix. It is this coming Thursday, December 6th, at the Phoenix Convention Center. I went last year. There will be a full day of tapping into some great expertise from some of Arizona's and the country's savviest business and government leaders. And, you know, it's hard to make it sound like I'm not reading this, but there's a lot of content to put in there. The Phoenix Mayor Greg Stanton will be there. The PetSmart CEO Robert Moran will be there, which I think is great. SeedSpot co-founder Courtney Klein-Johnson. Adelante Healthcare CEO Avien Sate-Tafoya. And the presenters, they'll make a business case for implementing sustainable practices, which I do all the time. They'll show you how to build a triple bottom line company, develop zero waste strategies, and connect you with lots of experts to get to the next level of environmental performance for you and for your company without breaking the bank. I hope you'll join me. I hope you'll come find my table. And if you are listening, remember that you can save $25 off your ticket with the code Mrs. Green, and I love that. So now there's that announcement. I won't get in trouble. I didn't forget it. Now let's go to this last segment, Anita. I think a great thing to talk about is salt. Is it the big bad wolf? What's your advice on that?
Well, and thanks for having me back. Well, I think in moderation, sodium should be consumed in moderation. Most people, when told to reduce their salt intake, say, I don't even use a salt shaker, but they forget that actually there's probably salt in the foods that they eat.
Just about
everything. A lot of packaged foods.
Right.
Excuse me?
It's in just about everything.
Well, and it's a preservative. You
right.
know, salt is, when they say salt of the earth, salt was traded. I mean, salt was a valuable thing back in the ages. And so when we talk about salt and I talk about should we shake the salt, just to be aware that there's sodium in the foods that you eat. If it tastes salty, then there's salt in it. The body does need sodium, but too much can make your blood pressure go up if it is that you have a propensity for that in your genetics. Most fresh foods contain, fresh food contains some sodium naturally, but salt is added to many canned and prepared foods to enhance the flavor. So if you're over 50, I would say overall that the salt that you would consume shouldn't be more than two-thirds of a teaspoon, which is about 1,500 milligrams of sodium.
Wow.
Two-thirds of a teaspoon when I have folks that are hypertensive and they're my patients, and I am more apt to, say they're in a hospital setting, I'm more apt to, typically the galley isn't cooking a lot, they don't add salt in their cooking, et cetera, in general, many don't. I would rather give that person a little bit of salt there in its own form and let them sprinkle it on what they want to sprinkle it on instead of adding it to the food. That way, I remember when I went to I did some work at the Culinary Institute of America in Hyde Park, New York. And it talked about having fat be your final application to a food that you're making because it's the first thing that's going to touch your tongue.
Right.
And you get that satisfaction right there at the beginning. Just to be aware of the sodium that's in your food. Don't salt the food before you even try it. So as far as sodium, don't add salt to your food. If it is that you are a big saltaholic, so to speak, just try to cut back on that. And try to taste the food first before you salt it. Choose foods that are labeled low sodium. Often the amount of sodium in the same kind of food they vary greatly between the brands. So you just need to read the label and try herbs, legal herbs, spices, herbs, vinegars, lemon juice. Those can all be flavorful in your diet, on your food, you know, in the food that you eat without even adding any salt.
And you, I think that what happens is that's when you begin to change your palate. And a personal thing that I do, one of the things that I admit I can't eat without salt is eggs. I need some salt on my eggs. But there again, it's being conscious that that's one of the things I do and not to sit down and just put salt all over the plate. And you do see people doing that. So,
well, you might consider just putting some cracked pepper on it, you know, grinding a little cracked pepper on that and seeing if it is that you just need some flavor. And maybe even now right here on the radio, I can maybe help you with that behavior. Just, you know, try something else that may substitute for that if you have a propensity to have issues with sodium. But there's nothing wrong with salt. You just, you know, there's some health issues that go along with that. So you don't need a whole bunch of salt. We just get a lot of salt in box, bags, and packaged foods.
But that's a good tip,
though. More than we think that we're taking in.
That's a really good tip. Because I think there's a lot of people that, a lot of people do salt their eggs. So pepper, and I love pepper. My husband would be considered a pepperaholic, and that's a good habit to have. He really likes fresh ground pepper on lots of the things that he eats. And he has been known to over pepper things at times, but we all, it puts some zing in it. So I'd like to talk now in the last segment, and time will fly. One of the things that you address, which I think is huge, one of my first guests when I launched the show was Lori David, and she wrote a book called The Family Dinner, and she was also the producer of An Inconvenient Truth, and she said, I don't want to talk about that at all. I want to talk about the importance of the family dinner, because that's where true sustainability begins, and I think your book is so in sync with that message. So if I may, I'd love to read the little short paragraph you wrote, because this will give listeners an insight as to why they want to buy your book. And it's chapter 11, and it's Easy Recipes A to Z. You have 26 recipes, and it encourages me to realize and revisit how important it is. So this is the paragraph that I think is why it will crystallize why people should read the book. In the midst of the completion of this book, my beloved Maltese, Tony Lee, nearly 17 years old, went to heaven. I'm told the furniture in heaven is made of liver treats. In the final months of her life, Tony patiently supervised my kitchen testing of all 26 recipes in this chapter. Which was her favorite recipe? Beer butt chicken, of course. And then you go into getting started. So tell people, again, in the next sentence made me laugh, are you too busy to cook? I understand your plight. Cook anyway. Talk about why it's so important to start cooking again.
Well, I think it's about taking ownership and loving yourself. It's about self-care. And it's about taking pride in being, it's good enough. And I've done some work with the folks over at the San Francisco Veterans Hospital and talking to them. They have a garden project there and helping them with teaching veterans how to cook and how to take care of themselves in that realm. And using, the book teaches you how, the chapter before chapter 11 teaches you how to cook. And it's called My Kitchen, My Kingdom. And so this is the next chapter that goes into, okay, now let's apply that. And that's when we did the baked potato experiment, where we baked the potato. You're not baking the potato. You're just washing it off, preparing it, and you're putting it in the oven, and then you can go read your book.
You know, I laughed at that. You don't bake the potato, the oven does. So I think that's what something like that you said in the book.
Right, yeah, get over it. And so, it again, it's a thing where perhaps marketing and media, which, you know, is a part of our culture, and that's how information gets out, is sometimes that marketing will and advertising, well, part of it is, oh, you're so busy, you're in such a hurry, you don't have time. Well, hey, you need to, a lot of that isn't necessarily true. And so it's about self-care and taking care of yourself as if you were your own child. So how would you take care of your child? Would you give them everything that was prepackaged, or would you make the wonderful Sicilian tomato sauce? That pasta sauce was one I got in the book. It's a Sicilian pasta sauce. It is fabulous. I learned how to make that over in Sicily, and Mr. Bianco Sicily from my landlady taught me how to make that. Very easy to make. It takes about 20 minutes to make, and you can put it over pasta. You can dip your whole grain bread in it and eat it that way. You can use it for various things, but it's very, very tasty. Those sorts of things, the self-care piece, the thing of really realizing what is in your food, and it brings the family back around the table. That table might, if you live alone, it might be you and your Maltese, you know, or your Maltese
right.
and yourself, or,
right.
or your cat. You and your cat are going to have dinner because, what do they say, cats have staff and dogs have owners. That piece where you bring people back around the table, and the aesthetic piece, the part about smelling the food as it's cooking, you know, that pleasing thing, that anticipation, it helps with the appetite. We know I do some work in hospice and palliative care in my clinical practice, and that whole piece of the symbology of food and having the patient be able to smell the fresh baked bread. Maybe they might just take a bite, one little bite, but it's that whole feeling of the spirituality of food. So as far as the cooking piece, it empowers you to be sustainable, that you made it yourself, and you'll be more aware of the ingredients because you know what the ingredients are because you're making it. And every recipe has a nutrition analysis to it. I did that by hand. You can get that in the it's all based on it's all based on the USDA database, so you can recapture all of that if you would want to modify any of those recipes. So the importance of people, bringing people back around the table. Even Steve Jobs, with as busy as he was in his life, they would gather around the table, their big long, table there in their kitchen, and that would be their main center of where they would communicate and where they would eat family dinners once he finally settled down and got married. So that table and gathering around the table is so important for the spirituality of your experience with food, and just as far as communication with yourself, the food, and your family.
A healthy relationship with food, you know, it brings to mind, I interviewed a woman named Sandra Steingraber, who is one of my heroes. She's a speaker, she's an author, she's a mother of two small children, her husband works, and she travels something like, I don't remember exactly, but something like 150 days a year. And a lot of times it's local, so she has her kids with her, but they have home cooked meals every night. And when she said that to me on the air, I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. And what she did is what you said. She cooks fresh things. She cooks when they're in season. She does canning. She'll make a big, huge crock pot of chili and then divide it into like four portions for enough for the meal. But it's the preparation. So when she has the time, she's preparing for what they're going to eat. You even have in your recipes, you know, it's just the clever titles, you know, A is for A plus honor roll. So it's not all,
oh my goodness,
it's
that
not
recipe
all tofu.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's
what?
It's not all tofu and kale.
Oh no.
There's
I've got
really
beer butt chicken in there. I've got the Kansas State game day pot roast. No, we have glonky, we have it all.
You've got real food there for real people, and it's just
I even have liver. One of my editors said, Anita, liver is controversial.
Like,
I said, liver is controversial. And in some levels, as far as the food politics piece, that is controversial as far as, oh, but you know what? That is a fabulous recipe for liver and onions, you know?
And that was something when my mother used to make kidney stew, and that was scary for me.
Oh, no, I've not had that, but
so let's talk about what's happening now. I cannot believe that I just got the 2-minute warning, and it's just amazing to me. This has been one of my most fun interviews, and I think you can hear it in my voice, and I say that sincerely. So how do people connect with you? How do they get a copy of your book? And what's in the crystal ball next for Anita Kobashevsky?
Well, thank you for that. They can purchase my book. They can connect with me, first of all, through AnitaBeHealthy.com. Or they can go to Food Field to Fork, write the author, and that's down in the bottom. That may be the more simple way to go. You can purchase my book. You can purchase it through To Be Sustainable. You can purchase it through foodfieldtofork.com, or you can get it through Amazon or any independent bookseller in any bookstore anywhere. You can purchase the book. It's electronic, and it's also a softback. There's also a big reference section in the back where, you know, you can also find information on any topic you're thinking about. There's about 30 pages in the back that cover that. And you can, communicate with me in that way. The book's actually just got through winning the Mom's Choice Award, and it won the gold medal for e-books. It was actually ranked number 2 in on Amazon. It was in September in the healthy living section, and it won the gold medal in nutrition, health, and safety and nutrition.
Congratulations on that. We're getting the music. Anita, thank you so much. I look forward to staying connected. Next week, a dear friend, Jackie Ottman, the Green Guru Marketer. She wrote the book, The New Rules of Green Marketing. You'll want to be here with me. Anita, many blessings, many thanks to all of you from Mrs. Green.